Listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Alright, a couple more. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Wait, should I do one more that's more varied? Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Hey, you're listening... Oh, wait, ready?
Yeah.
Hey, you're... Okay. Alright, I'm gonna start in 3, 2, 1. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR.
Hello, you are listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. I'm Eric, I'm your host. And it's been... Well, I mean, nothing gets you ready for a radio show than showing up 20 minutes late because you've been stuck in traffic on a bus for an hour and 20 minutes. So, on that note, let's change the tune with a banger, She's Mine by Alex Cameron.
Lovers having short careers, I wonder if they harbor fears of quickly gaining way too much and slowly, slowly losing touch. Lovers having short careers, it's like they never use their ears to listen to the beating chests. They pound like elevated nests in the winds. Dropping tears, they beat themselves into a state, confused and lost without a mate. Lovers hide amongst their peers, yeah, the booze start drowning out the cheers. Cause when you're fucking with your fate, you can't take no one the first date in the wind.
Bursaries, scholarships, buildings, research projects, sporting events, you name it, it's likely been supported by donors. Giving is a powerful thing, and coming up is the day to celebrate it. Giving Tuesday is on November 29. Give thanks and share your own giving stories using hashtag UBCGiving. Find out more at ubc.ca/givingtuesday.
Hey man, come out to the Rio Sunday, December 4th for the UBC Film Sox annual Big Lebowski Beverage Garden. It's totally free.
Except the, you know, beverages.
And wear a costume to maybe win a prize. Doors are at 6 and the movie will start at 6:30 due to Reno. It's a 19 plus event.
Please abide.
The always a great event. This is The Face for Radio. I'm your host, Eric Coates. The song we listen to is She's Mine by Alex Cameron off his album Jumping the Shark. He'll be opening for the OCs on Saturday. And with any luck, we'll have a interview with him on the show next week. All right. Now we're going to change it up. This is a story by Anton Chekhov called The Lottery Ticket. Enjoy.
The Lottery Ticket by Anton Chekhov. Ivan Dmitrich, a middle-class man who lived with his family on an income of 1,200 a year and was very well satisfied with his lot, sat down on the sofa after supper and began reading the newspaper. "I forgot to look at the newspaper today," his wife said to him as she cleared the table. "Look and see whether the list of drawings is there." "Yes, it is," said Ivan Dmitrich. "But hasn't your ticket lapsed?" "No, I took the interest on Tuesday." "What is the number?" "Series 9, 499, number 26." "All right, we will look. 9, 499, and 26." Ivan Dmitrich had no faith in lottery luck, and would not, as a rule, have consented to look at the lists of winning numbers, but now, as he had nothing else to do, and as the newspaper was before his eyes, he passed his finger downwards along the column of numbers. And immediately, as though in mockery of his scepticism, no further than the second line from the top, his eye was caught by the figure 9499. Unable to believe his eyes, he hurriedly dropped the paper on his knees without looking to see the number of the ticket, and, just as though someone had given him a douche of cold water, he felt an agreeable chill in the pit of his stomach, tingling and terrible and sweet. "Masha, 9499 is there," he said in a hollow voice. His wife looked at his astonished and panic-stricken face and realized that he was not joking. "9499?" she asked, turning pale and dropping the folded tablecloth on the table. "Yes, yes, it is, really is there." "And the number of the ticket?" "Oh yes, there's the number of the ticket too. But stay, wait, no, I say. Anyway, the number of our series is there. Anyway, you understand." Looking at his wife, Ivan Dmitrich gave a broad, senseless smile, like a baby when a bright object is shown it. His wife smiled too. It was as pleasant to her as to him that he only mentioned the series and did not try to find out the number of the winning ticket. To torment and tantalize oneself with hopes of possible fortune is so sweet, so thrilling. "It is our series," said Ivan Dmitrich after a long silence. "So there is a probability that we have won. It's only a probability, but there it is. Well, now look. Wait a little. We have plenty of time to be disappointed. It's on the second line from the top, so the prize is 75,000. That's not money, but power, capital. And in a minute I shall look at the list, and there, 26, eh? I say, what if we really have won?" The husband and wife began laughing and staring at one another in silence. The possibility of winning bewildered them. They could not have said, could not have dreamed, what they both needed that 75,000 for, what they would buy, where they would go. They thought only of the figures 9499 and 75,000, and pictured them in their imagination, while somehow they could not think of the happiness itself which was so possible. Ivan Dmitrich, holding the paper in his hand, walked several times from corner to corner, and only when he had recovered from the first impression began dreaming a little. "And if we have one," he said, "why, it will be a new life. It will be a transformation. The ticket is yours, but if it were mine, I should, first of all, of course, spend 25,000 on real property in the shape of an estate, 10,000 on immediate expenses, new furnishing, travelling, paying debts, and so on. The other 40,000 I would put in the bank and get interest on it." "Yes, an estate, that would be nice," said his wife, sitting down and dropping her hands in her lap. "Somewhere in the Tula or Oriol provinces. In the first place, we shouldn't need a summer villa, and besides, it would always bring in an income." And pictures came crowding on his imagination, each more gracious and poetical than the last. And in all these pictures he saw himself well-fed, serene, healthy, felt warm, even hot. Here, after eating a summer soup, cold as ice, he lay on his back on the burning sand close to a stream, or in the garden under a lime tree. It is hot. His little boy and girl are crawling about near him, digging in the sand or catching ladybirds in the grass. He dozes sweetly, thinking of nothing, and feeling all over that he need not go to the office today, tomorrow, or the day after. Or, tired of lying still, he goes to the hayfield, or to the forest for mushrooms, or watches the peasants catching fish with a net. When the sun sets, he takes a towel and soap and saunters to the bathing shed, where he undresses at his leisure, slowly rubs his bare chest with his hands, and goes into the water. And in the water, near the opaque, soapy circles, little fish flit to and fro, and green water weeds nod their heads. After bathing, there is tea with cream and milk rolls. In the evening, a walk or vint with the neighbours. "Yes, it would be nice to buy an estate," said his wife, also dreaming. And from her face, it was evident that she was enchanted by her thoughts. Ivan Dmitritch pictured to himself autumn, with its rains, its cold evenings, and its St. Martin's summer. At that season, he would have to take longer walks about the garden and beside the river, so as to get thoroughly chilled, and then drink a big glass of vodka and eat a salted mushroom or a soused cucumber, and then drink another. The children would come running from the kitchen garden, bringing a carrot and a radish smelling of fresh earth, and then he would lie stretched full length on the sofa, and in leisurely fashion turn over the pages of some illustrated magazine, or, covering his face with it and unbuttoning his waistcoat, give himself up to slumber. The St. Martin summer is followed by cloudy, gloomy weather. It rains day and night, the bare trees weep, the wind is damp and cold. The dogs, the horses, the fowls, all are wet, depressed, downcast. There is nowhere to walk, one can't go out for days together. One has to pace up and down the room, looking despondently at the grey window. It is dreary. Ivan Dmitritch stopped and looked at his wife. "I should go abroad, you know, Masha," he said. And he began thinking how nice it would be in late autumn to go abroad somewhere to the south of France, to Italy, to India. "I should certainly go abroad too," his wife said. "But look at the number of the ticket." "Wait, wait." He walked about the room and went on thinking. It occurred to him, what if his wife really did go abroad? It is pleasant to travel alone, or in the society of light, careless women who live in the present, and not such as think and talk all the journey about nothing but their children, sigh and tremble with dismay over every farthing. Ivan Dmitritch imagined his wife in the train with a multitude of parcels, baskets and bags. She would be sighing over something, complaining that the train made her head ache, that she had spent so much money. At the stations he would continually be having to run for boiling water, bread and butter. She wouldn't have dinner because of its being too dear. "She would begrudge me every farthing," he thought with a glance at his wife. "The lottery ticket is hers, not mine. Besides, what is the use of her going abroad? What does she want there? She would shut herself up in the hotel and not let me out of her sight, I know. and for the first time in his life his mind dwelt on the fact that his wife had grown elderly and plain, and that she was saturated through and through with the smell of cooking, while he was still young, fresh, and healthy, and might well have got married again. Of course, all that is silly nonsense, he thought, but why should she go abroad? What would she make of it? And yet she would go, of course, I can fancy. In reality, it is all one to her, whether it is Naples or Klin. She would only be in my way. I should be dependent upon her. I can fancy how, like a regular woman, she will lock the money up as soon as she gets it. She will hide it from me. She will look after her relations and grudge me every farthing. Ivan Dmitritch thought of her relations. All those wretched brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles would come crawling about as soon as they heard of the winning ticket, would begin whining like beggars and fawning upon them with oily, hypocritical smiles. Wretched, detestable people! If they were given anything, they would ask for more, while if they were refused, they would swear at them, slander them, and wish them every kind of misfortune. Ivan Dmitritch remembered his own relations and their faces, at which he had looked impartially in the past, struck him now as repulsive and hateful. They are such reptiles, he thought. And his wife's face, too, struck him as repulsive and hateful. Anger surged up in his heart against her, and he thought malignantly. She knows nothing about money, and so she is stingy. If she won it, she would give me 100 rubles and put the rest away under lock and key. And he looked at his wife, not with a smile now, but with hatred. She glanced at him too, and also with hatred and anger. She had her own daydreams, her own plans, her own reflections. She understood perfectly well what her husband's dreams were. She knew who would be the first to try and grab her winnings. It's very nice making daydreams at other people's expense, is what her eyes expressed. No, don't you dare! Her husband understood her look. Hatred began stirring again in his breast. And in order to annoy his wife, he glanced quickly, to spite her, at the fourth page, on the newspaper, and read out triumphantly, Series 9499, number 46, not 26. Hatred and hope both disappeared at once, and it began immediately to seem to Ivan Dmitritch and his wife that their rooms were dark and small and low-pitched, that the supper they had been eating was not doing them good, but lying heavy on their stomachs, that the evenings were long and wearisome. "What the devil's the meaning of it?" said Ivan Dmitritch, beginning to be ill-humoured. "Wherever one steps, there are bits of paper under one's feet, crumbs, husks. The rooms are never swept. One is simply forced to go out. Damnation take my soul entirely! I shall go and hang myself on the first aspen tree."
Thank you.
right, we are back. The show is A Face for Radio, and I am your host, Eric Coates. We just listened to the song Car on a Hill by Joni Mitchell from her album Court and Spark, which I bought on vinyl on Friday at the East Van Flea. I also got the Cars self-titled album and Harry Nilsson's A Little Touch of Schmilsson in the Night, where he does covers of you know, Great American Songbook classics, which is a very good album, as is this one. Anyway, before that, we listened to the short story The Lottery Ticket by Anton Chekhov, which I decided to play because my mom has been reading this book of short stories by Chekhov, and I've been talking to her about that, and I haven't read any of his stuff in a little while, so I thought, why not listen to one on the show? So I hope you enjoyed the story. Now we're going to change it up a little bit with the sound. We're going to play E.T. Mensa and the Tempos. E.T. Mensa was the king of high life in Ghana. High life was a style of music, or is a style of music, I think, in Ghana and also surrounding areas, influenced by jazz and other things. Fela Kuti actually played in E.T. Mensa's band for a while before hitting it solo. So that's what we've got next. Enjoy.
Papa, are they with you, mommy? Are they with you, papa? Ooh, all for you, all for you, E.T., all for you, all for you, E.T., all for you,
all for you, E.T., all for you, all for you, E.T., all for you. Are they with you, papa? Are they with you, mommy? Are they with you, papa? Ooh, all for you, all for you, E.T., all for you, all for you, E.T., all for you. Papa, ooh, all for you, all for you, E.T., all for you, all for you, E.T., all for you.
does. Ooh, he does. Yes, he does. And if somebody love me like he do, ooh, he do. Yes, he does. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. I'm in love for the first time. Nobody ever really done it. Oh, he done it. He done it good. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. Don't. I'm in love for the first time. Don't you know it's gonna last? It's a love that lasts forever. It's a love that has no past. Don't let me down.
Twas the day after Hallow's Eve, and all throughout the land, the young punks rejoiced, for the holidays had began.
It's time for Mint Records' Ridiculously Early Christmas Party.
On Saturday, November 26th, the Astoria will be filled with smiling faces with sparkles on their eyes, ready to hear the jolly Supermoon, Jay Arner, Fake Tears, Aaron Reed, and Woolworm. Plus, Chris Horrific will be there to lead a chorus of angels in singing our favorite seasonal jingles. Mint will also be releasing their special edition cassette, Quarter Life Crisis. And perhaps a certain Santa will be there to sweeten the night with goodies for the earliest Mint tykes.
Get your tickets in advance from Red Cat Records, Neptune Records, and Zulu Records.
Wow, I love that story.
Tune in to La Fiesta every other Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. with your host, Nick Arana. Listen to internationally acclaimed Musica Latina Caliente that makes your body move and your heart beat.
All right, this is A Face for Radio. We just listened to a couple Ghanaian oldies. First, E.T. Mensah and the Tempos with the song All For You off the album of the same name. And then we listened to Charlotte Dada with the song, with the cover of the Beatles' Don't Let Me Down and the album Money Be No Sand, 1960s Afro Lipso, Pigeon High Life, Afro Rock, and Afro Soul. It's compilation. All right, Rocket from Russia is up next, but hopefully I'll have time to play a couple more songs. Up next is Correspondent by Swim Team off of their album Out of the Flood, and if we have time, the song I Pity the Country by Willie Dunn off of his album Akwesasne Notes. Enjoy, thanks for tuning in.
I pity the country, I pity the state, and the mind of the man who thrives on hate. Small are the lives of cheats and of liars, of bigoted news press, fascist town crier. Deception annoys me, deception destroys me,
Bill of Rights throws me chills, they all know me. Frustrated art churchman, saving a soul man, Tinker the tailor, the colonial governor. They pull and they bomb me, they're seeking to draw me away from the roundness of the light. Off my body, the trip is with power, back bacon and welfare. Please they arrest me, materialist to test me, pollution that chokes me, movies that joke me, politicians exploit me, city life jades me, Hudson Bay fleece me, hunting lost for me. Government is bumbling, revolution's rumbling. To be ruled in impunity is tradition, continuity. I pity the country, I pity the state, and the mind of a man thrives on hate.